soap and water, or use an alcohol-based hand sanitizer. Thank you. Together, we can help to prevent the spread of illness.
I'm Tom Wilmer reporting from the San Luis Obispo County Airport in San Luis Obispo. We're here with Kevin Booman, who's the airport director. Hi, Kevin.
Hi, Tom.
Strange days continue, COVID-19 world.
We are certainly in interesting times for the airport industry and the travel industry, but all industries. We have remained continuously operational during the event. You know, as a transportation infrastructure asset, you know, our obligation and our intent is to be available for the public to travel both within the state of California and access interstate travel as well. So we certainly have been operating at a reduced schedule in terms of our flights per day, and of course our passenger volumes are way, way down, but we have remained online.
Some regional airports have lost carriers, but you have American, United, and Alaska who have continued to stay there.
We have sustained all of our carriers. We have had some routes suspended or frequencies reduced.
Give me an example.
Yeah. Well, Contour was the first carrier to reduce, and they suspended Las Vegas service. And then San Diego was suspended. The Portland launch has been deferred until this fall.
But you're still serving Seattle.
We are still serving Seattle, Denver, Dallas, Phoenix, and San Francisco. Los Angeles was actually suspended as well. United has reduced operations.
So there is no direct flight from San Luis Obispo to Los Angeles?
Not at this time.
Wow.
We're expecting that back in July. It's tentatively scheduled to come back in July, but we have seen some markets suspended. We're optimistic and confident that those will return. But for the time being, given the low demand for travel, it's very difficult for an airplane to fly empty.
That's interesting because Los Angeles International World Airport, major hub, I'm shocked that was dropped.
Yeah, and that isn't just our market. Los Angeles has seen reductions on a scale of what we've seen here, but if you look at United specifically in Los Angeles, they've reduced their level of activity there dramatically.
Interesting. Well, I have a flight out of here Saturday, and I was a little shocked because they routed me through SFO.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, well, why didn't they take me to LA? So
right.
There you go.
Right.
Yeah.
We are anticipating additional frequencies coming back with our markets that we are sustaining. Hard to predict at the moment when those are, but we expect in July we should see some additional frequencies on most of our markets.
Yeah, and that's another dynamic of the strange days. It's an ever-moving target.
It is.
You know, what United is thinking about or plotting this week might change next Monday.
Absolutely. Yeah. And then you consider the global aspects of a pandemic as areas become hotspots for various reasons, not the quote second wave, but just hotspots per se, that certainly affects demand in unusual ways.
Mm-hmm.
And concerning to think about the impacts of a second wave, not just for our industry, but businesses of all sorts, that if there is a true second wave, I'm concerned for all of us.
Yeah, I mean, we're in the middle of the first wave, and it's scaring.
Yeah.
You know, I'm flying into Texas, like I said, Saturday, and that's a hot spot in the country right now.
It is. Yeah. And, when we look at, the industry as it recovers, this has been the largest financial disruption to aviation, really, in the history of commercial aviation. There's never been anything like this. And you look at any other global event. You and I have in the past have talked about 9/11, or you pick any of the other pandemic-related events that have occurred globally. The aviation has never experienced this. So even the modeling for what do we expect next is really kind of working within a black box. We just don't know. And there's elements of consumer behavior and attitudes and shifts that may take on a permanent or a long duration level of change. The reasons for travel, how people travel, why they travel, when they travel, all of that, I would say, is very much to be determined because of this.
A concern that I've had for years has to do with sanitation of the aircraft, the tray tables, the seats and whatnot. So there are some infrastructure good things that are coming out of this even when we come out the other end.
I believe so. I think that air travel, much like many other forms of public or commercial transportation, have never had sanitation or hygiene standards of a caliber that I think what we're seeing today is now an expectation. And clearly, you know, there's air filtration and other types of things that occur as part of the development certification of the aircraft.
Let's talk about filtration and air quality. We both know that airlines typically use an enhanced HEPA filter that's a hospital grade.
Sure.
And that's, people just don't know, and they question that healthiness of the air in an aircraft because it is recirculated.
It is recirculated very frequently and filtered to a very high level. Granted, you've got a lot of density in the cabin on a full aircraft and a lot of potential sources of contaminants in there. And so it, you know, it needs that level of filtration. But I think what we're seeing now is a very intense focus on all the surface contact within the aircraft, and then of course the precautions that the travelers need to take to occupy the aircraft. The reality though of commercial aviation being sustainable at a reduced passenger load, though, is unfortunately just not possible.
Yeah.
You know, you hear discussions about, you know, the future of the middle seat on the airplane
being reversed.
And yeah, either being reversed or eliminated, or however, even just redesigning an aircraft interior. And of course, that's a long project for certification with a lot of investment, unknown impacts to customer response. And of course, the financial viability of just saying, well, we're always going to have a reasonable amount of spacing on the aircraft beyond what we have today. It would dramatically change the economics of air travel to where it would be unaffordable for most folks. We've kind of been through this golden age of aviation here in the last many years with affordability like there's never been.
You know,
travel for the masses.
Way before you were born, when I was a kid, I flew to Honolulu from San Francisco on Pan American Airways. My flight was $350 round trip in the 1960s. And you take those $1960 and you translate them to today, that's equivalent of probably $1,500, $1,800 for that flight.
Mm-hmm.
So some people don't realize that the economy of scale of affordability of air travel is unbelievably cheap.
It has. It's really changed, and it's opened up the world to people that never potentially had access to air travel because of cost as the primary barrier. Now, with that has come dramatically different business models with ultra-low-cost carrier, you know, kind of this race to the bottom in pricing and services, which serves a need and a demand. But at the same time, it's created some economics that are very challenging if you look at now, well, let's take a certain number of seats offline in the airplane. We'll see where that settles. I will be surprised if that's ever a permanent change that the airlines make. But for the time being, everything's on the table
as
they look at what can we do to restore customer confidence in flying. I mean, that's the real core of the issue is passenger confidence when it comes to getting in a metal tube and sitting very close to people you don't know for several hours. There's a lot of concern about that in any environment right now, let alone an airplane.
Going forward, one of the performance has to do with, like you were alluding to, maximum load capability, which has to be reduced out of necessity. Industry articles I've read believe that prices will have to go up commensurately.
It would, just to offset that lost revenue. The operating cost of the aircraft doesn't change, even though it would operate potentially at a lighter weight. There's just not the economics in there to take that many revenue paying seats offline and make it work.
So bottom line, going forward in our lives, our world, be prepared for higher cost of travel, air travel.
In the near term, I think that's certainly one of the rebound effects we may see, but it really comes back to the demand picture. If the public becomes comfortable with flying and we return to a pre-COVID level of activity in the near future, and that the vulnerabilities of this crisis are either removed or managed in ways that we see that activity return, you know, the cost of flying may not be dramatically affected, but in my opinion, it's probably too soon to tell.
Let's reel back to the here and now where
we
are at San Luis Obispo County Airport. And you all have come up with a protocol that you pushed out to the media just in the last week.
Yeah.
Talk to us about that and what it's about.
So we launched our nonstop service campaign, which really highlights all the things we're doing here at our facility to ensure that the highest standards of sanitation and cleanliness are met with additional custodial work above and beyond what we typically do. and that is a continuous process. We've got a signage added into the airport for social distancing, reminders on precautions, we've got messaging in place, and really trying to emphasize that we are going that extra distance and providing the levels of service that people would expect. Airports across the country are doing this. Certainly the measures reflect whatever local requirements may be in place and also the scale of their traffic. We're a very small airport and we have found kind of the right application of these procedures and processes right now. As our traffic continues to grow, we'll be continuing to amplify those with the volume. But we're very proud of the standards we're able to maintain at this point, and we hope the public finds that to be above and beyond their expectations.
Right over your shoulder is the TSA line. Is there any protocol for the passenger on social distance spacing, and how do you ensure that they keep 6 feet away in the TSA line, for example?
So like many of the places we go today, the grocery store and others, mm-hmm. we have asked for the 6 foot spacing, social distancing spacing.
Is that signage over there too?
Yeah, we have signage at the queue areas for both ticketing and check-in. We have it at the checkpoint, and then we also have it at the gates. People may notice here, we don't have anything on the floor.
Right, no X's on the floor.
And that's not because we didn't want to do it, but the type of floor finish we have here, people have commented over the years now about our beautiful concrete floors. One of the unfortunate things about this type of floor is you cannot put adhesive on it without mm-hmm. damaging the finish. It will peel up and cause problems. So we have not gone with a floor application.
Right. But yet the traveler knows to do their best to keep that distance.
We are reminding them in every way we can.
How about the process of wearing a mask as you transit through TSA and through the terminal pre-boarding?
Great question, yeah. The masks are required on the aircraft in accordance with the airline's requirements. There is no federal requirement for that, and in our county, there's no local requirement.
So can United strictly enforce that?
The airlines are enforcing that on board the aircraft for boarding. They want people to have masks, and they will provide masks.
And what if somebody said, I don't want to wear a mask?
That's an interesting question because we're seeing a much more rigorous approach to that now. It is no longer optional. Would they deny boarding? I'm not going to speak for the carriers, but it wouldn't surprise me if they did. The challenge we have in this industry right now is that there's no federal requirement within the regulations for masks. The state and local requirements vary throughout the country. And so as the airport here in San Luis Obispo, we're looking at across that spectrum from federal to local. There is no mask requirement. So we made the decision here that masks are welcome, but they are not required.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're seeing is a vast majority of people are wearing them. That's excellent. We're very happy about that. But as soon as you transition from you're welcome to wear it to you're required to wear mm-hmm. it, it becomes a much different interface that you're creating with the customer. For example, when someone's not wearing it. And we have taken the guidance from our local health officer, Dr. Bornstein, and we are following that protocol within the county that it is not required in this county. And until it is, we don't intend to implement them, or until the federal government says within airports you must wear them. And I'm sure there would be a lot of debate around that. We've had a lot of internal debate. It's been honestly a really tough decision for us to make. We feel we have the right application at the right time, and if there's a need to change it in the future, we certainly will.
Kevin Boomen, your job, your world is travel. Is aviation. And your family, you're planning and hoping to go on a holiday pretty soon. What sort of protocol are you planning as a family in your travel? But as far as preparedness, wearing gloves.
Yeah.
Or
it involves, the masks, having them available and wearing them, when needed and where needed. Lots of hand sanitizer, the usual precautions. Haven't used gloves yet, but certainly they're one thing that is worth considering and in a high-risk area if you're going to go there.
I've been working for two ICU nurses from French Hospital,
mm-hmm.
and we were talking yesterday about the use of gloves. And the one nurse said, well, if you wear a glove, that's just another layer of your hand. So you still have that same vulnerability. Mm-hmm. And they said more important is what you were alluding to is frequently refreshing of squirting your hands with alcohol or whatever.
Sanitization.
And just over and over again. I mean, do it coming and going every single portal and gauntlet.
Absolutely, and that will be part of the new normal. We've added hand sanitizer stations
in
several locations around the airport. Mm-hmm. We have a supply now to keep those as continuously mm-hmm. stocked as we can, but that is a really important part of this. I think, you know, if we imagine what do the next 6 months look like here, I think the two big variables I see out there, and there are many, but the two that pop up are what happens here if there's a second wave, and I think we see a decline in service beyond what we've already seen, meaning that we would probably see more destinations suspended and beyond that. The other thing that we're watching closely is the airlines received CARES Act grants similar to airports, and as part of that they have requirements to maintain their network at a given level until September 30th unless the DOT approves their withdrawal from a market. And we recently saw that with Delta withdrawing from Santa Barbara.
Oh, really?
They received early approval from DOT to remove from mm-hmm. that market. That being said, if we continue to see our traffic improve like it is now, I'm not concerned about September 30th. But if we were to see things flatten or slow down for one of many reasons, do the airlines take a hard look at this market beyond September 30th? Absolutely. So it's really important for us over the next few months to be showing positive signs of growth. Now, you may wonder, well, where are we in that spectrum right now? When we hit the very bottom of this, we were seeing 50 to 75 departing passengers a day on a total of 5 to 6 flights a day. Cumulatively.
Wow.
So 5 to 10 people per flight at the worst. Mm-hmm. Now, today, we're seeing between 250 and 300 passengers departing per day.
So load per aircraft.
And we're
average.
Still on the same number of flights per day.
How many people per aircraft?
Average roughly? Loads, I'd say we're probably in the 20 to 25 per aircraft. Mm-hmm. So depending on the airplane, you could be 50%.
So still a chance to get upgraded to first class.
Hopefully. That depends on day of week and destination mm-hmm. and whatnot, but we're seeing positive signs there. So when we've looked at our performance compared to peer airports around the country, we're consistently sitting within the top 10 of the non-hub airports in the United States for return of passenger service, mm-hmm. which is encouraging because that shows the strength of our local market. It shows the demand that we're starting to see related to tourism. And, of course, the state of California is now on a county-by-county basis allowing non-essential travel to occur. And so we are seeing some activity there begin again. We've got a long way to go, but we're moving in the right direction.
Kevin, to learn more, if somebody was curious about aviation travel in and out of San Luis Obispo County, website?
SlowAirport.com. Lots of information about the airport and our current flight activity is there on the arrivals and departures page. There is information related to COVID and precautions. It does change frequently, and there are many sources out there. TSA has got some information up related to some additional ways that they're managing the check-in process through the checkpoint. So lots of information out there that folks can find. What our flight schedules look like today, what sort of precautions they may need to take for health and safety. And we're updating that as things develop.
I'm Tom Wilmer, reporting from the San Luis Obispo County Airport, where we've been visiting with Kevin Booman, the airport director.
I'm leaving on a jet plane. I don't know when I'll be back again. Oh, babe, I hate to go.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. Produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com.
It's after midnight here in London. People are dancing on the rooftop. The fireworks are exploding in all directions.
This is the happiest day of my life.
75 years ago, World War II ended.
It was the deadliest military conflict in history, resulting in 85 million casualties. We mark the anniversary of the end of that war by celebrating the heroism of our greatest generation, those who served and those who supported their efforts at home. On September 2nd, we will commemorate the signing of the Articles of Surrender aboard the battleship Missouri Memorial at Pearl Harbor, Hawaii, a celebration of the peace that followed. Salute their service, honor their hope. Join us virtually for the events on September 2nd, 2020. For further information, go to 75thww2commemoration.org.
This, ladies and gentlemen, is the end of the Second World War.
Funding for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by Hawaiian Legacy Reforestation Initiative.
Hawaiian Legacy Hardwoods and Four Seasons Resort invite you to sponsor a legacy tree and contribute to the biodiversity of Hawaii. Legacy trees can honor an individual, commemorate an event, or memorialize a loved one. Every tree dedication is a living legacy and a gift which grows grander year after year. The best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago. The second best time is now.
The Hawaiian Legacy Reforestation Initiative was recently awarded the prestigious Phoenix Award by the Society of American Travel Writers. HLRI was one of four recipients of the prestigious award that recognizes international organizations actively involved in conservation, preservation, beautification, and anti-pollution campaigns that further the growth and appeal of travel destinations.